Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, I'm deeply conscious that I'm standing in between you and a glass of wine in the summer sunshine. So I'll try and keep this as sort of brief as possible. But also, I was kind of told this is much more of a conversation than it is a sort of seminar and lecture. That said, I thought it might be quite useful if I just put down some facts and figures about growing the visitor economy, particularly locally as well as nationally. Those are the members of ALVA. I went through some of them this morning, but the common denominator between all of them is that, one, they are attractions rather than venues and destinations. And actually, there's an interesting conversation to be had about growing a visitor economy on the back of venues, like conference venues, or as a destination in its own right. So, for example, the Cotswolds, or based upon attractions like, for example, Liverpool in terms of the City of Culture, or St Ives on the basis of Tate St Ives. And what is the proportionate mix in selling your destination based on all of those intrinsic facts? Is it sufficient not to have an attraction there, like West Oxfordshire and Blenheim Palace, for example? Or actually, can you be so bucolic as an attraction like the Cotswolds that actually you don't need attractions? The very surroundings have its own gravitational pull. There's a second thing that all of them have in common. They all get more than 1 million visitors a year, and that's growing. And even though this year, and it hasn't hit the press yet because we're announcing it tomorrow, even though this year has been the most disastrous year for attractions, and particularly weather-dependent attractions, since Foot and Mouth in 2001, that bad. And I'll talk about how bad it's been for some of these people a little later. There is still brilliant evidence that even in the teeth of a recession, the British public still want to go out on day trips, still have disposable income, still are spending in retail and catering environments, even if they have cut back on their overseas holidays. Now, all of this augurs really well for British tourism, and in particular for those local destinations who can absolutely market themselves as a must-see, must-visit, must-spend destination for whatever menu of attractions it's got. The third thing that also indicates is that all of those, and probably there's a couple of exceptions, but practically all of those only exist now because they have the confidence and the money, more often than not, to continually reinterpret and refurbish themselves. And one of the things that we've really found amongst all of these, and it's the National Museum of Scotland in Edinburgh is a great example, where it closed down for a period of 9 months in order to refurbish. It was a multi-million pound refurbishment. And then launched itself back in August of last year. And by August of this year, had 1.5 million visitors. And one of the things that they've been very sensible about is that that's not just a one-off. They've got stunning press coverage of all of that. All of their trustees are completely delighted, not least because the vast majority of the people, a bit like Riverside Museum in Glasgow that I was referring to earlier, the vast majority of the people who've come to Edinburgh National Museum of Scotland in Edinburgh over the last year or so have been from Edinburgh and Lothians, so they're repeat visitors. A quick scan of those people coming through the door reveals that actually, if you're going to put all of your marketing money into one sole website to get those repeat visitors in, any idea which it would be? Just one sole website. If they were to put £120,000 of all of their social media money and dedicate it to one website, Mumsnet.
Really?
Absolutely extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. And actually, as you say, you would have never have thought of it, but now absolutely makes sense. These are mums, not exclusively mums, but these are mums largely with underschool age children, desperate to get out of the house, but also absolutely committed to their children having a fun and educational experience where they can meet up with other mums, have a family-friendly experience, doesn't cost the earth, ideally if it's free, even better. But what absolutely solidifies their support for that particular attraction is what one of my colleagues was talking about earlier, which is hygiene issues. As long as there's good toilets, food and baby changing, you've got a captured market. And just to further give you evidence of that, the National Portrait Gallery in Scotland, in Edinburgh, have done a marketing partnership with Mumsnet as, you know, want to come somewhere completely fascinating, show your kids the kind of Scots that they can be, because the portraiture criteria at the National Portrait Gallery in Scotland is that all the portraits are either of Scots or painted by Scots. So come in, bring your kids, show them the kind of Scots that they can be and meet up with all of your, you know, fellow mums at the same time. Absolutely blown away the visitor numbers, and in particular, and this could sound flippant, and in particular, retail, catering, cupcakes and coffee. And given that most people get the highest percentage of their profits from cupcakes and coffee in retail experiences, it's a no-brainer. So some of this stuff isn't, you know, hugely sophisticated, and some of this stuff isn't because they've got big budgets. Actually, what they've thought through is who exactly is it that we want, and let's work backwards to see how we get them. And actually, that working back is proving for many of these people, most of which are the largest attractions in town, to be hugely significant. The Roman Baths and the Pump Room in Bath, again, local authority owned. Most people look at this and think, well, you know, that's all DCMS paid for, run big attractions. Or like Harry Potter, they've got, you know, more money than they can know what to do with. Roman Baths and Pump Room Bath. Sure, Bath, heavily dependent tourism economy. They absolutely know in North Somerset what tourism means and what would it mean if it wasn't there. But there's a local authority who are continually reinvesting in the presentation of what is actually a fairly monothematic presentation. It's a, you know, unlike exhibitions or galleries, it doesn't particularly change. And yet, the repeat visitors they get is absolutely stunning. And one of the reasons that they've managed to be so successful is because of things like their audio guide tours. And actually, they've just been helping out the Ashmolean in Oxford with, again, really simple ideas. But unless you've gone through the process of thinking, what does a visitor want? Wouldn't necessarily come up with the answer. What Royal Baths do in Bath is that they have an audio guide, classic audio guide. I mean, actually, audio guides relatively old-fashioned now in the advent of iPads and iPhones. But classic audio guide, and you've got two different guides that you can choose. One is the normal, chronological, geographical. You're going past number one. This is what happened at one. Going past two. This is two. Or you can flatter yourself and choose to go for the Bill Bryson guide, which actually is not chronological. And he's only, say there are, I don't know, 100 spots on the guide. He's picked out only 14. But he tells you what he can see from that spot. So you stand where Bill Bryson stands. He's telling you what you can see and then explains it in his own words. The take-up rate of the Bill Bryson tour, which doesn't cost any more, is about 70% as opposed to the normal one. Why? Because you're flattered to think that you have the same interest, the same personality, same level of intelligence as Bill Bryson, and why wouldn't you? But actually, it's kind of an aspirational choice. And Jeremy Ensor at Ashmolean Museum is doing exactly the same now for the Oxford Museums, but with various different ex-Oxford scholars and alumni telling you about their Oxford. And again, a brilliant idea just to get repeat visitors back. They're saying the same thing, but they're being told through different eyes and through different vocabulary. So the message about all of these is they're getting a million visitors, but they're continually rethinking who they are, what they can offer their visitors, and what their visitors can offer them. And therefore, the diversity of the ALVA membership is really quite stunning. And a good example is up at the V&A on the top left, and the Hollywood Costume Exhibition. This starts, I think it's in the next 2 weeks. It's been trailed in the press since about February of this year. Many people are saying, not quite V&A, it sounds all a bit commercial. Fine, they're happy with that criticism because you should see their forward bookings. And actually, there is a point here about stretching your brand credibly, legitimately, and allowing it to encompass new commercial enterprises and challenges, which is completely fantastic. And I've thrown in down at the bottom Roman Baths on the left-hand side, St. Paul's Cathedral. I'm on the board of St. Paul's Cathedral, and this time last year it was a total nightmare. You probably remember it. I've spoken at a number of crisis management seminars about St. Paul's Cathedral, what we got right, but more often what we got wrong. One of the really interesting things about St. Paul's is that it absolutely realises why it was created. It's fundamentally a place of worship and prayer. But if it didn't get visitors in, who account for 92% of all of its income, if it didn't understand the visitor mentality, then it wouldn't be there next year, let alone in 100 years, let alone 350 years. And therefore, even the most establishment of products or attractions, which is why I'm on the board, has to continually rethink its brand essence, its offer, and what it means to the potential and potentially repeat visitor. Blackpool, similar point, and I didn't know that you were going to be here today, but I'm all the more delighted that you are, because Blackpool for me is also a destination rather than an attraction. It's a series of attractions, but a destination, who absolutely have come to the conclusion, and the right and proper one, that one of the ways that actually it can enhance its brand is through culture, experience, arts and fun. And they know that that's underpinned, and forgive me if I'm talking what you already know, but they absolutely know that's the consumer veneer at the top. But underpinning that is getting £1.2 billion of social security benefits, which is paid into Blackpool residents, that reduced. It's also about rescaping the landscape of social housing. It's about ensuring that Blackpool has a new and vibrant offer, not only to the northwest, but far further, but using, as we saw at the Cultural Olympiad and the Olympics and the Paralympics, the buzz of place about making that economic change. And although there has been a couple of sort of blips along the way, like the casino debacle, I'm really excited about watching what Blackpool does in the next couple of years, because I think it's going to be one of the most interesting stories in town. And again, delighted you're here, but this isn't for your benefit.
I'll pay you later.
Thank you very much.
That's interesting, because we were talking earlier, we did that, our marketing thing, East Lindsay Escape Nest, and we've done exactly that.
There's not many here. Oh, record. Oh, are we online as well then? Oh, great. Okay.
You're on Crime Watch now, actually.
Crime Watch now. We actually have taken the offer. Our offer was Bucket and Spade, traditional family holiday.
Yeah.
We've taken that now, and we've had Garsington Opera Live on the beach this year. We have Swedish and Denmark connections, and it's happening in that way. But I'm beginning to think, what can we do next? Because we've changed quite a lot of our offer in that, but it's now keeping pace with what, I mean, we have lots of ideas for next year, but when you think we still need to be there in 2020, well, I don't, but it still needs to be there, the offer. How can you keep on changing and changing for the better? We've had a tremendous uplift in visitors
because
of what we've done. But we've still got to maintain the bucket and spade. I'm sure that's like Blackpool as well, because that's the traditional offer that people...
And you don't want to get rid of your core audience,
but
at the same time you can expand it. And I think one of the... I mean, the challenge is fundamentally a simple one, is that if you don't change, look at the alternative.
Well, yes, we won't survive. No.
And you only have to look at the sort of, you know, the Bridlingtons of this world and you know, other destinations along the Fylde coast and the Lancashire coast who have failed to grip, like Morecambe, who have failed to grip the opportunity of presenting themselves in a new way using potentially different vocabulary. Yeah. And that's okay, as long as you're all signed up to the script,
yes,
you know, and agree with what you think.
But it's the wider environment of it all as well.
Yeah.
And we know we have a huge housing list and all that sort of thing, and developing social housing. But we've got the flood risk, so we can't. But we are actually getting some inward investment now, which is good.
Mm.
And once we get broadband, I'm hoping to encourage creative industries to come, because we have farming, but farming doesn't employ people. Well, not many people.
Mm.
Tourism is our main employment base in that respect. Yeah, so it does, it supports, you know, we're trying to catch up with you. I don't think we'll ever get 15 million visitors, but you never know.
Well, you never know, and it's what they spend and what they do to the economy as well. I'll just flip...
No,
not at all. You know this, it's the sixth largest industry employing... and by the way, I'll leave my presentation for you so you can have all the facts and figures afterwards. So that's why it's significant. I mean, we know that. That's our bread and butter. This is the kind of arguments that we use back in local authority negotiations. You will have caught up with the fact that Hugh Robertson, as of last week, is our new Minister for Sport and Tourism. As I mentioned this morning, and I slightly gave the game away, that's 15 ministers in 9 years. Average tenure is 18 months. It's not a flippant comment, actually. If your local authority chief exec on average only lasted 18 months, or even your leader of your council, let alone the nominal chief exec or chairman of Britain's sixth largest industry, you would despair. And yet this is the kind of reality as what's happening in terms of national policy making. And I just give a couple of indications beneath of some of the madness that we've had to endure over the last 15 years, which has not put an extra person in a bed or a person on a beach or a person in a gift shop in the last 15 years. The RDAs, the vast majority, though clearly not all, I have to say, doing a stunning job, got tourism, and I know that that's been a part of the conversation that you were having earlier. They got tourism, they got why it was important. And not least in terms of regeneration of local jobs, and particularly at this time in a recession, jobs at all skill levels. So jobs that are accessible for the school leaver without any qualifications, let alone an English baccalaureate, right the way through up to retired people as well. Local enterprise or local economic partnerships, really too early to say what they're going to be like. Entirely depends on the area and the individual destination's own concept and understanding of tourism. In somewhere like Bristol, where an LEP is being created, there are higher hopes that actually everybody chipping, all the tourism businesses chipping in to an additional pot which would provide marketing funds and marketing money may well have some virtue. But only if they have sufficient size and energy and buy-in, both political and financial, to do that. But in some other places of the country where there's no big attraction or it's a particularly rural community, I can't see how an LEP will work at all, because there isn't the sufficient weight of attractions and tourism businesses who have the disposable income to add into that local pot. Retail has always been a classic example of a sector who have benefited enormously from tourism and hardly ever contribute to its growth. And that's as true in London as it is anywhere else. Casino, well, you know...
Well, we had one of those.
Yeah, I mean, embarrassing amounts of government time that went into and money and, you know, hijacked by the Daily Mail editorials.
But local authorities invested an awful lot of time and effort into that, we did.
Yeah, and you know, essentially wasted money.
Plans, inward investment plans and everything built round, in place around it, and then it just disappeared. Nobody's seen anything. It's just...
I know, it's the kind of elephant in the room, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what was absolutely clear about all of that, and I know from sort of Manchester's experience, is that actually it wasn't about the casino. That was the headline. It was about the shops and the housing and the social. It was all about all the other stuff. Planning regulations. Well, as we know in the last 2 weeks, there is likely to be new planning regulations which are going to be far more liberal than what has gone before. Plus, we've got the kind of hangover of the planning regulations that the National Trust in particular had a lot to say on. And that's about making it more able to be more creative in a planning sense, but at the same time not at the expense of our countryside and actually one of the reasons why people come here in the first place. Bed tax gets floated occasionally from time to time. It was actually a Liberal Democrat policy in the last London mayoral elections. And occasionally you'll hear a particular local authority popping up, Edinburgh was the last, saying we want to consider this. Actually, even where it's happened in America, particularly in Florida, hasn't really been sustained and is really attractive to politicians as a sort of short-term pot of money, actually doesn't really deliver what you think it's going to deliver. There have also been a number of structural changes. Two things, I think. One is the very fact of it manages to provide a coherence to the local economy who are dependent on tourism. So suddenly they think, okay, actually, we're part of the tourism businesses and we didn't think we are, but now that we're going to be charged for it, we are. So one of the unintended consequences is that people will suddenly realise that they're in tourism. And that's quite an educational coup. But the second is that the Florida's experience of bed taxes is that all of the money is collected, you know, say on a hypothecated basis, from, you know, 2% of bed tax revenues per hotel. That gets collected centrally. And the vast majority of all of that money then gets to promote the central business districts who are already doing pretty well. So the people who don't benefit from it are the people who are out of town, who, for whom the 2% is a disproportionately high level of profit for them, and actually they're getting pretty insignificant benefits. And so the people who really benefit are the Hiltons and the Ramadas and the Intercontinentals, who actually have got the international global marketing budgets to do pretty nicely anyway. And so although it's usually proposed by the kind of B&B and small operators, they're usually the least benefited by it. So it's a sort of perverse incentive.
It's the wrong time to introduce a new tax.
Well, as I come on to say a little later, tax is an obstacle for us already. We don't want to be lobbing another one in. There are structural changes to Visit England. Visit England do a good job. It's really unfortunate, however, that they're the biggest TV campaign that there's been in about 20 years, was then met with the wettest summer for 100 years. Not their fault, clearly. There is a consultation exercise out at the moment, which is about changing the board makeup of Visit England. If you're interested in that, do go onto the Visit England website or the DCMS website. One of the proposals is to make destinations much more prominent on the board of Visit England, and you'll have your own particular views about that. Again, this is just background, really, as opposed to something to discuss. But it is quite helpful once in a while just to realise the kind of industry that we're in, how big, how important, how crucial it is, particularly to local and national economies at this point in an economic cycle. And these are very often the kind of facts and figures that can usefully be deployed at local level too, particularly if you're able to extrapolate them and then turn them into local facts and figures, either for media or for politicians. And again, you can have this at the end. Tourism and entrepreneurial activity go absolutely hand in hand. You might not see it on Dragon's Den, but tourism is the place, the space, the area where entrepreneurs usually most make most impact. And that's partly because of the kind of people who work in tourism. A huge percentage of women working in tourism, and particularly women who are working at home. And therefore, tourism, because it's flexible, it's not particularly hierarchical, it's got good access at lots of skill points, is really attractive to both home workers and also those who've got caring responsibilities. Turnover rates in the sector, usually you say that, you know, my son is going into tourism, but it's only a part-time thing, it's only a short-term thing until he gets a better job. Actually, the turnover rates in the sector have declined significantly, and partly because of the programmes around chefs and restaurants. Actually, it's seen as a legitimate, if not necessarily sexy, career. And that's really changed too. Tax. The killer fact here is that out of 139 countries, we're 135th in terms of international competitiveness, principally because of air passenger duty and VAT. We've got the second highest rate of VAT in the EU. And air passenger duty, which of course is levied on those coming into the country, so it's essentially a tax on tourism, a tax on fun to people coming here, a potential disincentive to investment, is huge. But equally, it's also a tax on outbound Brits when they go on holiday too. We've been arguing with the Treasury for quite some time about the need to improve our competitiveness and to remove those obstacles to growth. We've suggested that air passenger duties should be frozen and then reduced, as they've done in Ireland incredibly successfully in the last 5 years. And just pointing at Ireland as well, they have also reduced their VAT on hotel and bedroom accommodation from 17.5% to 5% in the last 5 years, and have seen the revenues rocket, both in terms of tourism spend in Ireland, but also, crucially, the amount of VAT back to the Irish Exchequer. If you get more and more people spending, you will get more people paying tax on that spend and back into the Exchequer. Treasury have closed all of their ears to that at the moment, but it's still a significant amount of money. So growing tourism, I think there are three particular things that always should be applied whether you're talking about growing tourism at a national level, regional or local. The fundamentals are investing in skills, quality, investment and infrastructure. But that all of that only happens if you've got the political will to allow that to be created in the first place. And I've put here vocabulary and media engagement as one of the things that is absolutely required to gain that political will. And I'll just give you a quick example. Two jobs ago, I was head of government and public affairs at Visit Britain. So largely the sort of policy advisor to DCMS on tourism issues. And dealing with the Treasury was incredibly difficult because they had the kind of mindset, and this sounds a bit like sort of Yes Minister or the thick of it, they had the kind of mindset that all public expenditure is theft from the Treasury. You know, they want to hang on to it, and if it goes out of the door, somehow you've got one over on them. We had to clearly change our vocabulary and the way that we engaged with Treasury. And although we were still using the same statistics and facts, all of which were evidentially proved and they were well-sourced, we just flipped the way that we talked about it. So instead of talking about X number of pounds coming into the Treasury from VAT and air passenger duty, and therefore wouldn't you want to invest in a successful business rather than a failing business, we flipped it and we used politicians' language and started saying the VAT and air passenger duty paid by overseas tourists coming to the UK last year paid the wages of 140,000 NHS nurses. And it was that slightly tabloid way of communicating that absolutely got their attention. We were talking about a very visible outcome of tourism spend. And we hypothecate it and were very clear about what that could get you for your money. And that absolutely changed the whole nature of discussion because suddenly politicians and indeed some civil servants completely saw tourism in a new way. They saw it as an economic driver rather than an economic drain. And I remember it was only about 20 years ago when John Prescott referred to tourism as a Mickey Mouse industry. Because, and this isn't to be disparaging of John Prescott, his intellectual and his physical makeup was proper jobs are engineering and they're manufacturing and they're sort of sweaty and they're, you know, this is a kind of hull thing. And I get that completely. But that's of the Britain of the 1950s and 1960s. You know, the world ain't like that anymore. Actually, what would he make of iPads and social media and digital economy? And so the whole nature of trying to explain what tourism is about and what it can achieve has changed too.
I think you're doing him a disservice, I should say. I think he was trying to compliment you, given the huge success of Disney Worldwide.
I think that's enormously generous of you.
It is clearly a Mickey Mouse
industry. But I think most people get that now. And even though we in the industry have a bit of a panic every time a tourism minister seems to have been reshuffled and we don't know who's going to get the job, and we have a sort of, oh, love me kind of pang of insecurity that the government doesn't quite get us. And I think the government does get us, but it doesn't get us as much as it should. We potentially need to change our vocabulary and the way that we engage with politicians to get that through. And with that will come the investment in skills, quality, infrastructure, etc. The enablers is that once you've got the building blocks right, and this works as much as a local level as a national level, the real enablers, the people, the things that will actively get people to this country or get people to your destination are policy driven. They're things like VAT. Is it affordable to go to where I'm going? Air passenger duty, visas. We have an incredibly bureaucratic and very off-putting visa system in this country, which means that because we're not part of Schengen, the 26 countries which share common borders in mainland continental Europe plus Ireland, not including Ireland, you have to get a separate visa if you're coming as part of a Chinese tour operator package to come to the UK rather than you have to pay £66 for the whole of Europe, and then £86 just to come to the United Kingdom. Funnily enough, most Chinese tour operators drop the UK off their European tour itineraries because it just puts up that additional price and therefore drops their profit margin. That means that Germany and France get three times the amount of Chinese visitors than the UK does. Madness, absolute madness, particularly when you go to China and you ask people, if money was no object, which country would you like to go to holiday in? And they say Britain. And they said that before the Olympics and the Paralympics. So what will they say now? So visas, an obstacle to growth, again, policy-driven. Regional Development Fund. Some of you from destinations will ultimately benefit from the Regional Development Fund as it's being put out from Visit England. If you don't know about it, and there is still time to bid for it, do go onto the Visit England website. There is genuinely new millions of pounds to spend on getting destinations who are at particular experience, particular economic disadvantage, benefiting from this new money. Planning, fuel prices. Fuel prices is an important one. I'm conscious that we haven't got many people from Scotland here. But actually, if you ask the National Trust for Scotland how their business was this year, they will tell you it was utterly disastrous, principally because of the weather and then because of fuel prices. That most of their properties are in gorgeous, beautiful rural locations, but it's too expensive to drive there from Glasgow or Inverness or Edinburgh. And that's really put the spanner in the works. And then the drivers, the motivators. absolutely research, absolutely marketing, and absolutely experience. Research, you'll know, you understand that, you do it. Marketing, you do that too. Experience, I'll just pick up on two things before we finish. The two major trends of this year, and I absolutely confidently predict for the next 2 years, one is localism, and I don't mean that in an Eric Pickles sense. One is localism, and the second is authenticity. Localism is all about local menus, everything sourced from within 50 miles. If you're eating food in Skegness, you cannot eat that food anywhere else. It reeks, in a very positive sense, of Skegness. It reeks of locality. This is an experience that cannot be replicated anywhere else. So that's the localism thing. And the second is authenticity, links to localism, but also when I go to Blackpool, the experience I have in Blackpool is qualitatively different, positively, than the experience that I will have anywhere else in the UK. If I go to Chessington World Adventure, I absolutely know that it's going to be utterly unlike anything that I go to elsewhere. If I go to Oxford, I want to be absolutely confident that this is an Oxford experience I'm having, not any other high street across the country. And therefore, the authenticity of place, being proud and communicating what your area is about, is becoming more and more and more appealing. And the research that indicates all of that is also linked to people's fascination with genealogy too. Who am I? Where do I come from? What are my people like? What is it about where I live that has made an impression on me? Am I purely a collection of cells and DNA, or actually is the place that I've been born and brought up in, the place I live, a contributing factor to who I am? And that experience is becoming, through all the research that we've been doing, my members and Visit England, is becoming more and more and more more and more important, particularly when people are looking at price sensitivity and deciding, I want to stay at home because last year it was fantastic. And I want to stay at home, not because I can't afford to go abroad anymore, but I'm making a positive choice to stay here in Britain. And so all of those things mean that the British domestic tourist has never been more inclined to spend their money and their time in your destinations. But the challenge to you is to get them off the sofa and into your locality. But if ever there was a time where they've been more predisposed to do that, it's absolutely now. I'm going to shut up now. That's right, isn't it? Right.
We've got a call about two minutes ago, so it's probably just a couple of minutes to go. So if anyone wants to speak, you can.
And if you get it right, this is what it looks like. The memories that can be created absolutely last a generation. And I know it's a bit cheesy, but it's absolutely true. When I look back at all of my ALVA members and think, why do they do the job that they do? It's because actually all of them provide the memories, create the backdrops, create the environments for people's happiest memories. All of those are where people get married or get engaged or have their first date or go out with their children or spend the happiest times away from work. They're the places that people opt to go to positively rather than because there's nothing else. Actually, that's a fantastic opportunity to get it really right and therefore to get money off them as well. Really happy to take any questions or frankly, just shut up, to be honest.
I was just interested in this idea of critical mass. You know, there's loads of things happening in lots of areas that may have maybe a destination, or maybe they've got a number of different things on offer. It's about how you make the most of that critical mass without losing the brand that you're known for. And I don't know whether there are some examples of where people have done that, because I'm sure if an attraction in an area knew of all the other things that were going on in that area, there probably could be huge opportunities in joining up in some way, but I don't know where that's happening well.
You're absolutely right. And you know, at conferences like this, people throw around the word partnership, and it sounds great, and it is good. And of course you must do that, and it's really difficult to do back at the ranch. But partnership is absolutely crucial because in Manchester, for example, you know, this has gone through a brand sea change in the last 10 years, pretty much. Certainly pre the Commonwealth Games. One of the things that we absolutely knew that we needed to do was to make it really easy to book and access and enjoy Manchester. So we found that of all of the different attractions in Manchester, they were all using different online ticketing systems, for example. And we thought, actually, as people get more social media and tech savvy and they want to do bookings all in one go, why don't we just have one booking system for all of the attractions in Manchester? Now, I'm not saying that that was easy. I'm not saying it wasn't, you know, particularly inexpensive. But in terms of making it really easy to buy Manchester, if you're coming up for the weekend and you've got all of the attractions and all of the theatres all on one website, it's made a huge difference. So that's a kind of process thing. But then there's also just partnership and sharing information and getting everybody signed up to a common agenda and script. Is there a burning question?
I just have one comment to make. I'm really pleased to hear about the sort of changing trends because and the kind of focus on authenticity and a kind of depth of experience because I just feel as though we've seen, if we're seeing a real turnaround, therefore, in quality, because we've all been to those visitor attractions where you're treated like just part of a herd and you feel as though as soon as you've come out you've just been ripped off and you know just you know the
they still exist by the way
I'm sure they well I know they do but so I think for me what's really exciting is and I think the challenge is about the strengthening the partnership particularly between local authorities, attractions, the culture, heritage and sports sectors and communities to provide that sort of sense of ownership, authenticity and that amazing experience for visitors. And, you know, then we really can all win. Mm. So I'm really excited about that.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for the invitation. Really happy to be along here. And if you've got questions after this or you think, you know, there may be things that Alva can help you with, I mean, do give me a shout. I'm really, you know, even though you're not necessarily members, that's no skin off my nose, that's fine. So do give me a shout. But thanks very much. And this is the last session of the day.
Yeah.
You are liberated. Go and enjoy the environs of Victoria.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.